I want to talk about something that I think is going to offend Noah.
Oh, good. Good. I'm ready. I'm ready. So it was funny. I did an interview with, do you know who Chris Curran is?
No.
He runs a website called Podcast Engineering School, and he produces podcasts for like Fortune 500 companies, large companies that want a social media presence, that want a podcast presence, but don't want to, they don't necessarily have the skills
to run a podcast.
Right. They just want to pay somebody.
I've thought about that as a way of making money.
Oh yeah. You should. Yeah. So I think he makes a living at it. But so he wanted to interview me. And so I interviewed with him, and we were having this exact discussion about how, so there are certain things in the broadcast industry that they have solved certain problems. And for some reason, podcasters like try to reinvent the wheel. And then you have the other end of the spectrum where you have podcasters have like launched way ahead of where traditional broadcast is, and they just refuse to catch up. And that's why when they did an interview with you at the TV, they're bringing a camera half the size of Saturn into your studio, right, when really a tiny little 1080p camera would have done just fine.
It's funny you say that, because when the TV crew got here, this is a while ago, but when the TV crew got here, their camera was so large they had to like maneuver it around our lights, and we've got three cameras in here,
right?
Like they all just fit just fine.
That are perfectly adjusted for your studio, that are perfectly aligned to where you're sitting.
Yeah, yeah. So right before we hit record today, Noah and I went through what felt like 12 years. It probably was like a half hour of troubleshooting. And let me tell you, I don't know what happened on your end, but let me tell you what happened on my end. I rebooted the box because I'm having some sound interface issues, and when it booted back up, I had a long time ago set the Skype machine to just auto install updates. I figured it's an LTS. I never touch it. Just go ahead and let's just try this and see how this works under Ubuntu. It's sort of an experiment. And boy, did it bite me today. So I log into the system. It boots up fresh. And I go to launch Discord because that's how we were going to all connect today. And Discord says, hey, bro, you got to download a deb. You got to update Discord before you can use it. Okay, I say, no problem. Go ahead and click the download link. It launches my web browser. Now, at this point, I've had three or four errors have been detected. Would you like to report them? And I'm closing them. And now the keyring prompt has come up because I've launched my browser. So this is like the fifth pop-up I've had. And all I want to do is just launch frickin' Discord. So I enter in the keychain and I unlock it. And the browser finishes loading. It downloads the deb file. That's all great. I download the deb file, double-click it. It launches my favorite installer, GDebi. Good to go. Hit the install process. The dialog comes up to ask for the root password or my pseudo password. I put that in. Starts the installation process. And as the installation process is starting, it bombs out. You need to close your other package manager. If Synaptic is open, try closing it first. My other package manager. I don't have any. Okay, so I close it. I do a little PS. AUX. Oh, look at that. Oh, it's downloading a new kernel and a new NVIDIA driver.
Oh.
And of course, because it's opened up an HTTP connection and it's downloading a binary file over HTTP, of course we lock our package manager, so the database has been locked, and then you have to wait for the package to download, and then it has to install the package. Well, of course, because it's the NVIDIA driver, there's also a kernel module that needs to be installed. So now I'm waiting for DKMS to build the kernel module while I just want to connect to Discord so we can do our show when we had scheduled to do our show, and you guys don't know what's happening. I can't tell you what's going on because I can't connect to Discord to tell you.
Oh, it's okay, Chris. I couldn't connect to Discord for you to tell me, so I was struggling with my own issues, which I'll get to after you're done.
It's okay. I'm a good relay.
So then, of course, it's done building my kernel module. It's done installing the actual deb packages, but we still got to lock the package database while we rebuild the initramfs, while we recreate my grub entries, all in the background. Mind you, I've never clicked anything about. At one point when I set up the machine, I said automatically download install, and I guess I didn't think about like when Meltdown Inspector would hit and all of a sudden I'd have my new a new kernel and new NVIDIA drivers just blasted at me when I'm just trying to do a show, and it locked up the package database for 25 minutes while all of this went on in the background, and I had to just sit there with no prompts. I just had to sit there and keep refreshing PSAUX to see when it was done. And now, after all is said and done, I can't launch any of the Unity configuration utilities. Like if I click on the gear menu and I go to system settings, I just get an app crash. sorry, this app has crashed. Would you like to report it back to the developers? So I can't even go in there and change my update settings now because all the different settings applets just crash when I launch them.
So I struggled at first with the little CAPTCHA thing, which here's the issue with that is that the truth of the matter is, and I'd be the first one to admit this, if I could get the actual package installed, then that wouldn't have been an issue to begin with. But here's the real issue that I was struggling with is everything in here is designed for professional broadcast, and Discord is really meant for gamers that are talking to each other. And so there's no AES-67 integration. So the problem is that Discord tries to just use the little pop-up web browser audio thing. And what's interesting is Hangouts and OpenTalk, RTC, all of those seem to find that just fine. Pick up that AES-67 driver. It sends audio. For whatever reason, I can't get Discord to do that. And what's so frustrating is I have two things on this. One is what's frustrating is what I was talking about before is that I know for a fact that there are other solutions. So I showed up here 5 minutes before I went on the air and I had a guest who had never connected to the studio before. I send him a link. He clicks on the link. We're connected. Everything's good. We do a whole show. It's perfect. I would have preferred to use the different audio interface, but, far as connecting, it worked just fine. But what Rakai said early on illustrates a really interesting point and something I've been trying to drive home on the Ask Noah show and something we've talked about, but we never really point to as an example and call it out and say, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So we got on the air and Rakai said, the guy who's using Windows 10, everything works just fine. But in previous conversations, we've gone through and Rakai said, yeah, Discord works on Linux. It works on Linux. You should use it. And this is what I'm talking about. When you have a person who isn't using Linux as a daily driver, their opinion on the tools that work best on Linux become skewed because they're not dealing with those problems on a daily basis. And that's kind of that's really the crux of my issue is
before he jumps in and defends himself.
Sure.
I will say I grok where you're going. I don't want to be lumped in completely, though, because the other end of this argument would be if you were using Discord daily, you probably would have had time to work these kinks out and understand it better. And so there's an ebb and flow because Discord's used more frequently for a lot of other things in JB. So it just happens to be generally set up. Today was a bad example because one of the things about Discord is you got to update. There's no choice.
I don't update these machines. They sit there and they just run because they're only doing one thing. Like this particular computer, the only thing it does in life is connect me to other guests.
But I think your core observation that does tend to happen, especially in tech, is people that aren't necessarily users of a platform or a particular technology will often become advocates for it in a way that they understand the fundamentals. Well, it's using WebRTC. It's an Electron app. In fact, our good friends have even packaged it up now as a snap, so it's easier than ever. So the logic is there, but you're right. There is nuance that gets missed. Okay, now, Beer, go ahead and defend yourself. Sorry.
I was just going to say that I understand Noah's point, but I specifically know at least a dozen Linux gamers that use Discord daily.
Issue. Absolutely. But do you know any professional broadcasters that have broadcast studios that are using it?
I suppose not.
I was surprised to learn that some do use Skype and Hangouts. So there, you have to have some accommodation
Skype works in here just fine. Hangouts, I mean, that's what we're using now. Hangouts and Skype work just fine.
Yeah, I guess I can't say that I know any professional broadcasters, but I do know a lot of people that do video and audio content on the internet that use it regularly.
Yeah.
The one thing I feel like pros are better at that we don't get to is professionals, and they often make up for it by spending a lot of money.
Yes.
But, if we had, say, a huge Bitcoin debit card or something that we were just going to go blow crazy internet money on, we would have hardware boxes between you and I that we flip on, and it essentially creates a audio over Ethernet connection, and it's mixer to mixer. We wouldn't even be using Layer 7 applications on a desktop PC.
Right. But, it's what's interesting, the voiceover industry – so in for doing remote broadcasts and stuff, you're right. They have all gone to hardware codecs. But I'll tell you something. The voiceover industry, we are working with a radio imaging specialist who makes a branding for it. In fact, I'll play it for you. You might get a kick out of it. He's doing voiceover, and all of that voiceover work is done through a web app. So there are web apps for broadcast quality recording that work very, very well. In fact, that's what we were using last night. I just don't know any of them that are using Discord.
Yeah, and I also don't know what the cost is on those often.
Oh, they're
free.
They're free.
What? Well, you got to send me some links. We'll check it out, definitely.
I actually have in the past. Here, I'll forward you the link I sent you before.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to see it.
You know what might be interesting, Noah, is to get a Discord developer on the Ask Noah show.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
Here's the thing. I feel like we're in, and this is, again, this is what I'm talking about, is I feel like we're trying to reinvent the wheel and solve problems that have been solved 10 years ago, and we have solutions that work just fine. We just, for some reason, certain groups of people just don't want to use the solutions that exist.
Send me this link. I want to see this link.
Yeah, sure.
See this.
So I think it's,
you know, I'm thinking, this is all behind the scenes stuff, but we do this on User Error sometimes, is, you know, I've been thinking about redoing how we do the audio stream and getting a dedicated hardware encoder for that too. So I'm just about to pull the trigger on that. The problem is it's like $400. So that's, you know, a little expensive to just pull the trigger when I'm not 100% sure, because I could also just install Butt. I don't know if you guys have seen Butt.
Oh, yeah. Broadcast using this tool. There's a better one. It's called Dark Ice. The thing about Dark Ice is I've had Butt crash on occasion.
Yeah.
Not terribly
yeah,
often,
yeah.
But it does. Dark Ice never crashes. Never, ever crashes. It just sits there and runs and runs and runs.
Now, but does Dark Ice, now I know this is a real chicken shit reason, but does Dark Ice have a graphical interface like Butt does?
No, it's all command line, sorry. But here's the
thing. I don't mind that.
Honestly, you script it when it starts, when would you not want it broadcasting the audio stream?
Yeah, I suppose so.
And you can always grab the process and kill it if you really want to.
There is a part of me that still likes to have an application that shows me line level.
Yeah, and so that you can see when it's on and off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, but that's just sort of, you know, if I could, dude, I'd have dedicated monitors in the studio with, like, here's mic levels, here's studio levels. I mean, really, if I could, I would have way even more information. And I already have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 screens in front of me right now.
Well, and the X32, and I was working on one the other day.
Oh, yeah, that's got a screen, too,
and,
right?
Not only does it have a screen, but you can select an individual channel, and it will give you a view meter of just that channel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do that all the time. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But what I've actually been using more is the X32 edit software, mixer software that runs on Linux.
Yeah.
Because I can pull up my mic there, and on another screen I can have the Discord room. It's pretty cool. Anyways, behind-the-scenes stuff, but yeah, I've been thinking about a lot of that kind of stuff that I want to work on. Yeah, you know what? There is actually a bunch of different ones. It's not just Butt anymore. Source Connect also looks like a decent one. Oh, look at it. Source Connect Free looks like it also is maybe a Butt alternative.
Yeah, I know, it's not really a Butt alternative. It is a remote IP. Audio over IP link, yeah.
I see.
But the nice thing is,
I like that UI. That's exactly what I'm talking about, where you get the line level and that kind of, I like that a lot.
Yeah, well, the big thing for me is that it ties into all of the broadcast equipment, so it's specifically designed to facilitate remote broadcast. The nice thing about that is it will automatically choose to I don't want to call it compression, because that's audio compression, that's a separate thing, but it will do a bit reduced rate if it needs to maintain a solid audio connection, and then when the bandwidth becomes available, it will automatically adjust to come up, or you can statically set it and say, listen, I want you to send 256 mono AAC, the 100 or MP3 or whatever, all the time.
How would you do, I mean, we got to move on because I know not everybody cares, how would you do a group call with something like this? Yeah, I basically have to have dedicated machines, right? And then mixing?
It'll do if you want the Meech on an individual track, you'd have to, but it will do group calls. The free one will do, you can do up to 2 guest participants, and then they charge you some money. And I don't think it's very much, but they do charge some money. But yeah, you can do a group call.
Dude, that's great. Do you want to check this out? I'll put a link in the show notes too. So this could be the ultimate Skype killer if you just need great, clear audio. God, that's great. That is so great. Noah, thank you. So that was heavy. That was heavy, inside baseball and bitchy. So what do you guys say we loosen up a little bit with a story that I was on the front lines for when it broke?
Okay.
I'm your reporter on the scene for this one. It's a big one. You know, this is definitely one of those that's going to really make a dent in the universe. Oregon has changed their laws, and now citizens can pump their own gas, and it's causing a bit of a crisis. Have you heard about this?
Yes, I have. Like, I saw pictures on Facebook of, like, people.
Oh,
like, well, because here's the thing. There was some gas station owner that apparently didn't even have credit card readers on their pumps, and so they're like, we don't, there's no way, like, we don't even have a way to measure gas, and I was telling Sarah that, and she goes, well, then how did they know how much gas to charge for when they were pumping it?
So yeah, I was there. So those of you who don't know, which is probably everybody outside of Oregon, is it was against the law to pump your own gas or petrol in Oregon. So you'd go there, you'd pull up, and you just sit there in your car and you wait for a nice gas attendant to come out and pump your gas for you. And this goes back to the early days of automobiles when things were dangerous with gasoline and people didn't know what the hell they were doing with it. And I guess there's been it's funny. Every time I've gone to Oregon, this has been a topic of conversation for years now, since Noah and I have been going to OSCON in Portland.
Yeah, because I got out to go put gas in my car like I do everywhere else in the country, yeah. And then I got yelled at.
yeah. You know what's worse is when you're in a 40-foot RV and you pull up and they don't really – you know, they just weren't super motivated to get out there. And one time in the RV, we waited 20 minutes to get gas. Just chilling. And it's, you know, it's not in a 40-foot vehicle, you don't just like bail and go somewhere else because you can't even fit in some gas station. So you really are just sort of a captive audience. So I wasn't a big fan of it. And so I started kumatsing like I typically do. And
no.
I was quickly corrected by some locals. They cherished this law. They saw it as a way for jobs. They got jobs out of it. It was a jobs program. It was great in the winter. They don't have to get out of their car. And the number one thing people told me is their hands don't smell like gas during the day. They don't want their hands to smell like gas.
And I've been pumping gas for 28 years and my hands don't smell like gas.
That's not a thing. But that was the common belief there. And that it was dangerous. In fact, there's a quote from their local CBS 10 affiliate. This gal, she's 62. She says, "I don't even know how to pump gas. I'm a native Oregonian. I say no thanks. I don't want to smell like gasoline."
Yeah, well, you know, if you pump your gas wrong, your car explodes.
There's also, of course, right, stories of people pulling out with the nozzles still in their vehicle, trying to put diesel instead of regular gasoline.
And E85 in cars that don't take E85. I saw that.
Everybody's freaking out. And so I was there on New Year's Day when this law went into effect. And I stayed there for a couple of days after that. And nothing changed. All of the gas attendants still plan to have pump attendants. They all still plan to do that, and because their customer base prefers it. Oregonians just prefer it that way, so they're just going to keep on doing it.
Good for them. I think they should.
And you know what's nice? It is a lot of times they wash your windshield, and I'm not sure if you're supposed to tip them. They don't seem to be looking for tips.
You think it just factored into the price of gas? I suppose in Washington you wouldn't know.
It might be. It's still cheaper than their gas is still cheaper than Washington.
Yeah, that's what
gas.
I'm saying.
That's what blows my mind. You go down, you go across a border, an invisible border line, and you get cheaper gas, and they pump it for you. But the takeaway was tons of internet outrage, lots of media coverage, years of conversation building up to this big decision, years of conversation of people debating it, getting very passionate about it, and then the law changes. And nothing else changes. People are still getting their gas pumped for them. They can, if they want to get out of their car now, they can. But the 3 or 4 days, four days after New Year's, I didn't see a single person pump their own gas. So I just, nothing. It's just so funny how we get so freaked out and we get so worked up and it becomes a multi-year drama. And then it's the source of ridicule on Facebook. And we got a link in the show notes of like a roundup of everybody making fun of them.
So here's the thing. Anyone who knows my politics knows I'd be the first one to say, listen, if Oregonians want to have somebody pump their gas, that should be up to Oregonians. And what works in Oregon doesn't necessarily work in Washington or North Dakota. And that's perfectly okay. But that said, like, it's not like the concept of pumping gas is any different than putting, you know, water into a small swimming pool. It's the same concept. Like, you put a thing in there, you squirt the thing, and then thing goes into the other thing, and then you pull the thing out. Like, I just, it's not like it's a complicated procedure. Like, any rational self-thinking human should be able to handle that, I would think.
I don't actually know if that's true. The mental game I like to play is, what if... just out of the blue, this is an impossibility, but what if just out of the blue, automobiles existed one day, today, like in 2018? We were still riding horses in 2017, and on January 1st, the first automobile went on sale, and it's like the entire industry, it's just here. Like, it was just imported from another country or something. I my personal belief, and I've said this before, is
yeah, you have.
We would treat these as way too much responsibility
right.
for the average driver. I mean, they're yeah. on drugs. They don't know what the hell they're doing.
Right.
They have slow reaction time. These are 20,000 pounds in some cases. And then you have to put this explosive liquid into them, which
yeah.
you could just drip all over the ground and smoke and catch. We would regulate and control the hell out of these things.
Yeah. Yeah, we absolutely would.
And so when I think about it, I'm like, maybe Oregon's not so crazy, but it was pretty great seeing everywhere I went. Like I was at I went to the Seaside Brewing Company in Seaside, Oregon, and I was sitting out in a outside area where they had a fireplace and people are sitting around the fireplace. This was the topic of conversation, so it was just funny. And then nothing. You know, let's take a moment to talk about something, though, your education, Linux Academy. Go to linuxacademy.com/unplug and sign up for a free 7-day trial of the Linux Academy learning platform. It's a library with complete comprehensive learning tools on Linux, but then all of the other really fancy resume building stuff around Linux, too, like OpenStack and AWS. Man, they've got some of the best AWS content in the business, as well as Azure and the nitty-gritties of all the different things around Linux, like networking and firewalling and storage. And apparently somebody's flying overhead right now, too. So I don't think you could learn to be a pilot, but that's kind of the point. It's not one of these training platforms where you learn about flying in the kitchen sink and basket weaving. It's a platform to learn about Linux. So they focused in on that. They've hired full-time educators, like actual professional educators, where if you have a question, you can ask them. They've got full-time staff. They're constantly revising existing content and adding new. You always get value out of your subscription, and you can try it 7 days for free at linuxacademy.com/unplugged. linuxacademy.com/unplugged. Go there and sign up. Thank you to Linux Academy for sponsoring the Use Air program. Now, I want to talk about something that I think is going to offend Noah.
Oh, good. Good. I'm ready. Yeah. I'm ready.
So before we get there, let's give Beard a chance to update us on his situation. So Beard is he's not in the studio. He's gone.
Is this his first episode out. Remote, or has he done it before?
I've done Linux Unplugged before.
Yeah, and we had User Air edited, produced, and released remotely, but yeah, this is the first one he's done remotely. So you got a whole new setup over there, Beard. You got like an office. Are you and the lady in the same room for the office? Like, give us like a mental picture. What's the Beard setup now?
One bedroom apartment. So I am currently in the living room,
which is also now the home office.
Correct.
Yeah, that's how I do it too.
And we have just a very long IKEA table full of computers.
Nice. Good
do you
call.
Really, that's like, right in the middle of the living room?
That's the only thing in the living room.
Can I get a picture of this? Like, it doesn't have to be right now, but at some point?
I can hook you up with a picture.
Okay. What is your setup? Is it the same setup that you had back at JB, or did you upgrade it all?
It is similar. I have the iMac to my left. I have my two monitors now in front of me, and I have a computer under the desk and another one to my right.
And you're using the PR40 and your Mackie mixer?
Yep.
Nice.
Got to get you some curtains. I hear some room tone in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always an ongoing thing. So how is it working out? How you like being downtown?
It's pretty nice. It's got its downsides, but overall it's pretty good. I would not recommend riding around the city on like the 3 a.m. bus. There's a lot of drunks.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, that's definitely a thing. But that's going to be true in any city, I suppose. Are you feeling so Northwest right now? Hashtag.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't have any flannel yet, but I'm getting there.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that you did the classic first move out setup, the same one I did, the long IKEA table, and set that down and put everything on there. It's exactly the setup I had for years. It's cheap, it's practical, it gets the job done. All right. Well, let's offend Noah a little bit. And I'm not saying I'm all in on this, so it's not like this defines Chris now. But this is something I've been trying for about 4 or 5 days, and it's nice to have. It's a nice, like...
Did you buy a Mac?
No, no.
Oh, okay. No.
Have you seen the price of Bitcoin? No. no, it is, it's Plex Cloud, and it's
oh,
something...
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, no.
I know.
Okay, yeah. Plex Cloud, tell me about Plex Cloud.
Hang in there, Brown Bear. It's only available to us elite Plex Pass subscribers. But if you become a Plex Pass subscriber, one of the bennies is they will spin up a Plex server for you, essentially on their servers. It's like a Plex VPS that's dedicated just to Plex. And you don't get any aspect of the machine other than the Plex interface. God really knows how they're actually isolating it out. But what it uses for storage is the interesting thing about Plex Cloud. Without ever setting up a single box, without having to install any software on any of your computers, you can get a Plex Cloud server that can stream to the NVIDIA Shield TV or Roku or Apple TV or, you know, insert name of set-top box. You can use the web interface on a desktop PC. You can use all of the apps. You get 100% of the features of a Plex server that you would set up yourself, but you never have to maintain it. You never have to fiddle with anything, and you don't have to invest in local storage because it uses, as the name would imply, cloud storage. Now, what's interesting is the cloud storage is Dropbox or Google Drive or OneDrive Personal. So when this was announced,
I see where you're going with this. So if you have a G Suite account, then you have unlimited storage for your media.
Yes, exactly. And so I thought, this is a great way to get my Google account shut down. I'm never going to use this. And so this was announced back in March of 2017. And I just basically sat back and went, well, this is going to last 2 months. Let's see how this goes. To my surprise, what the consensus seems to be in the Plex community is, as long as you never turn on the share flag in Google Drive, Google lets you upload an unbelievable amount of pirated content to Google
they
Drive.
Don't care.
Now, don't tell
they
anybody.
They don't scan it. No, they don't scan it.
Yeah, well, I thought that was Google's thing. See? Well, so that was a surprise when I learned that you have at it, Haas. And so I thought, all right, well, let's see how true that is. So I created a TV and movies folder, and I just uploaded the files whole hog. Didn't bother trying to come up with some crazy encryption scheme because Plex Cloud doesn't let you decrypt anything. I didn't bother scrambling the names because I wanted Plex to properly identify the files and give me the right metadata. So I just uploaded it whole hog, just to, you know, my backups that I've accumulated.
And now you can access the Google Doc.
No, so far it's been okay. In fact, it's been great. It's been fine. So it's actually kind of a neat workflow because I can have stuff download here at the studio. Google Drive can sync it up to Google Drive, then the Plex Cloud scans it, and you know, within a window of 15 minutes, I can drop an NZB file in Dropbox on my laptop at the RV, and within about 15-20 minutes, it's on my Plex Cloud. So I'm using it for like.
And how much does this cost a month, the Plex Cloud thing?
Well, you just have to have Plex Pass, and I don't remember. I think I subscribed eons ago.
You can get a lifetime membership, though, right?
It's $120. Yeah, $120 is what it is now. Okay. Yearly is $40, and monthly is $5.
So one-time fee of $100 and whatever, and then you can get access to this cloud service.
Yeah, you get other stuff, too, with Plex Pass. But, yeah, it's kind of great because then it gets associated to my Plex account. And so all of the systems I'm logged into on Plex now have access to this. So that means the kids at Angela's house can get – so I can put something on there and they know how to go into the menu and choose the Plex Cloud machine now and they can watch something immediately. I don't have to like figure out how to get a file to Angela or anything. It's just – it's so great. Now the problem, of course, is you're streaming remotely. So if you're in my situation where you have limited bandwidth because you're on a MiFi at home, it can be shit sometimes when AT&T is throttling me like a bastard. And it just is almost unusable. Now, the nice thing is Plex lets you choose. So you can rack it down to like a 280p video basically at 400 kilobits if you want. Like you can really turn that down. And I did so I could finish Star Trek Discovery this week. But this is how – I am a paying member for CBS All Access so that way I can support the continued development of Star Trek Discovery because – sorry to upset Star Trek fans out there. But as a lifelong Star Trek fan, I think Discovery is great. And so I'm willing to pay for it. But I can't actually stream it over their app because my MiFi is so slow.
God, we could have a whole conversation about that.
So what I'm doing now is I pay for my subscription on CBS All Access. I back it up via Usenet and then copy it up to Google Drive and let Plex Cloud sync it. And so before it's even aired on the West Coast, technically, you know, this isn't true for Star Trek, but in general terms, like this is the one show this is the exception for. But before it's even generally aired on the West Coast, I already have it on the Plex Cloud. which has been really, really great. And it's not – I can't use it as my primary way to watch media because my MiFi just doesn't hold up. But if I was here at the studio where we have a pretty solid 100 megabit connection that works a lot of the time, I would be tempted to not even bother setting up thousands of dollars of local storage, because even if Google shut me down one day, you move over to another one. I don't know. It's not a good solution for me. But I was, after watching this thing for almost a year, I was really impressed.
I've got a couple of thoughts. The first is, you know, it's interesting that you're discovering new ways to go to the cloud, because what's interesting is I've seen a trend the other way. This week alone, I was just looking it up while you were explaining this. I was just looking. We have three service calls in this upcoming week and it's Wednesday, and we're going to put in in-house servers. They're migrating off of the cloud. It's interesting how people are wanting to go the other direction, and I don't really know what spurred that. It's not Snowden. I mean, it's been too long for that to be the catalyst.
I think it's networks. The networks have just not been competitively keeping up. So
yeah, maybe.
The thing is, I am also at the same time, I've got a couple of instances of MB set up that I'm experimenting with, and I am trying to refine the process of onloading new media to my local storage and then bringing it to the RV. Like, I haven't – that's my preferred system, because then I can do full resolution, no interruptions,
right,
and the LAN at the RV is solid, so I can stream it to any of the TVs in the RV, no problem. So I prefer to do local offline media playback. And Kodi is still my favorite. Kodi with the Plex or MB plugin is my favorite way to do it on the Shield TV. But the funny thing is I have been trying to get some system down where I can get local media sunk to a drive and then bring it to the RV and sync it to the RV's drive, which is challenging since it's connected to an Android device. I've been trying to get that down for like a year now, and I still haven't really nailed it. And I've been screwing around with MB for like three solid months. Still haven't really got it the way I want. And this Plex Cloud thing, I got up and going in like 4 or 5 days, and it was like immediate results.
So let me ask you this: what would be wrong with building a little FreeNAS box and having like a limited rsync? So you go in there and specify the transfer rate that goes and syncs with a master, you know, disk or whatever, where you have all of your media to bring that into the RV.
I kind of played with that a little bit, so I just forego setting up FreeNAS and just, you know, left my laptop set up, got that stuff running on my laptop, and tried syncing to my laptop for a couple of days. And what I have found, and this also even affects like if I want to leave a system and have it do a huge package upgrade, is if I leave that thing doing sustained data transfer for 2 or 3 hours, it goes into some funk. And when I get home, what I often find is like my internet isn't working correctly, or I haven't been able to finish an Arch update for about a month. I've got so many packages that I got to get updated.
So here would be how I think I would go about that if you were interested in solving that particular problem. And maybe, like you said, maybe it's just like, you know what, if I have this cloud thing, I could just use that and then I don't have to worry about solving it. But just as a thought experiment, one thing that could be interesting is what if you scripted and said, we'll run rsync for like, we know it works in an hour. So run it for an hour, give it a 20-minute break, run it for an hour, give it a 20-minute, and just schedule that out so that, you know, overnight maybe when you're not using data anyway, it's just going and pulling chunks of data down off of your storage solution.
That'd be, you know, where my mind has been is put a hard drive connected to like a Raspberry Pi or something in the truck.
Oh, sure.
That's running like sync thing or BitTorrent sync.
Yeah, have a carrier of sorts.
Right. And then when it connects to the Wi-Fi at the studio, it syncs. And then when I get home and it connects to the RV's Wi-Fi, it syncs.
But
the problem is then getting the data on the drive that's connected to the Shield TV.
Right.
Now, one of the other things that I am tempted to do is just order new internet service at the junkyard. We park there so often now that it might be worth spending $40-$50 a month to have a actual internet dedicated internet connection.
Did you see AT&T is offering home internet now?
Yeah.
So here's what's interesting. I mean, here's the thing. You animal noise at it, but here's the thing. We set one up for a lady in her apartment. I got to tell you, man, that is some slick snot. They send you the little box. It looks like a home router. It's got wired ports on the back, but there's no WAN connection. It's going out over the internet, and there's a bridge mode, so you can shut their router off and use Microtech.
What about throttling?
Say again.
What about throttling after 22 gigs?
I don't know if they apply that to the home internet or not. I don't know. We didn't set up the plan. We just set up the device for. But it was slick. I mean, we got all of our devices connected and stuff. And I was like, man, it's interesting that you can have internet now in your house with no actual physical wired WAN connection.
Yeah.
It was fast, too. It was like, you know, 50 down.
That's part of what's keeping me on the MiFi, in a sense, is what's really nice about having a MiFi for our internet connection is it's just the internet is never a factor for us. When we we're driving, when we move campsites, when we decide to go to Oregon for 5 days, I never once thought, how am I going to get internet at all while I'm driving, while I'm parked, because the Wi-Fi and the little unit I have that bridges the MiFi to my LAN and the MiFi itself are all connected to battery backup. So even when we're going down the road, my internet's online, my security cameras are working, everything's connected. You know, so it's really nice having that MiFi because, you know, I can get great transfer when I haven't gone over 22 gigs, or when they're not throttling like nuts. And sometimes I end up parking somewhere where there's very low usage on the cell network. And so even with like two bars, I can still get 10, 15 megabits because nobody's using the network out there. I'm out in the middle of nowhere and I got two bars of LTE, and it's amazing. I can have two bars of LTE and I can get 10 megabits, and I can be parked at the junkyard with four bars of LTE but throttled, and I'll barely break a megabit. Usually it's like 300K at best. And then sometimes it's even worse than that. So it's really great. It's super convenient, but it may be time to just bite the bullet, spend the money, and order dedicated internet. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you are not alone. I may be here on home internet, but I still also have a data cap now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Is it bad?
It is 1 terabyte. So I'm, 10 days into the month, and I'm already halfway through the data cap.
Oh, poor Rikai.
Wow, dude.
And,
good job.
If I want to, I do have the option to remove that data cap, but if I want to remove it, it's an extra $50 a month.
Damn.
Also,
so you got it.
Comcast offers gigabit in Seattle, but it is only gigabit down. It's only 35 megabits up.
Yeah, but that's, you know why? Because they don't want you hosting anything. That's the whole idea. Yeah. It's a residential connection.
It's because it's over cable lines, not fiber.
That has nothing to do with it. The bandwidth of a physical of a medium is irrelevant. You can do asynchronous or synchronous transfer through.
I thought that was a DOCSIS 3 whatever it is thing.
You can only do gigabit with DOCSIS 3.1, and they haven't upgraded all their stuff.
The CMTS or? But what I'm saying is the physical medium support. It doesn't matter how you split that up. I mean, maybe their CMTS only supports sending, you know, as part of the DOCSIS protocol, only supports sending a certain amount in one direction. But as far as, like, actual physical limitations, they don't exist.
Well, according to Comcast, they do. If you get a connection from them over coax, they can only send 35 megabits.
So here, I'll tell you
but
why.
If you
doesn't matter what it doesn't really matter what the technology supports if that's all they're going
to
do.
Yeah, well, I guess to a certain degree, but I guess why I question it is because we have a DOCSIS 3 modem, and we have, I think we're 50 up, 200 down. So if it was a DOCSIS limitation, or if it was a limitation of CAT or whatever RG6 coax, you know,
it all sounds so extravagant to me.
Yeah,
I'm happy when I'm getting a megabit
right
now.
Well, you know, I can get two megabits symmetrical from them for $300 a month. So maybe you should move the studio to Seattle, Chris.
Jeez.
You know, so. We had a hashtag ask error thing that came into the show, and it says, what's the riskiest thing you do every day? And my answer was going to be, spoiler alert, I'm skipping out on my medical insurance now. So this is I'm officially in the no longer covered phase to try to save about $380 a month, $400 a month. So I thought, you know, this is going to be – it's scary. It's risky. But God, it's going to be it's going to be life changing to have another $400 a month. That's the position I'm in. It's just life changing. So I'm looking forward to this. I'm really, really looking forward to this to just take some of the pressure off. We got a letter on Monday that said that the mortgage at the studio is going up $700 a month. So wiping out all of the gains that I'm taking from not having medical insurance. And so now it really is a serious topic of conversation about selling the studio. Because while it seems crazy not to have a nice, static, stable, well-refined studio for as many shows as we do, there's nothing inherently about the shows that requires a physical space.
Well, not only that, but like at the price you're paying for a mortgage, you actually probably could get a place in Seattle for cheaper at this point.
No, or you could, or what I would do is rent a space in a data center. I mean, geez, you can get two or four U's of what's that place, that Joe's Data Center or whatever? He sells 2 U's for like $40 a month.
Yeah.
So I mean, you could rent a whole rack for like 100.
There's all kinds of things. If I was gonna have my perfect situation, it would be like a dedicated like shack on a piece of land that I could also park jupes and have hookups,
yeah,
and good internet connectivity and just sort of solve two problems right there. But the truth is I'm also just sort of I'm having a romantic affair with an idea that is just build a couple of studios, small studios, one in the RV,
one
in the truck. And, maybe one in Angela's garage or something, build them all or something. Because part of me really wants to be able to just record from anywhere. That's always sort of been a dream of mine for years now. You guys know that. And so,
honestly,
there's just a lot of different ways to take it. There's a lot of different
really,
trajectories.
Dude, if you start thinking through that, the way that you have restructured a lot of the shows on JB means that with an audio interface, a microphone, and a headphone set, you're good to do the majority of the shows that you do, right? Like, so Unfiltered gets a little bit dicey, but if you think about the way you record Linux Action News, all you need to be able to do is record local audio and have some semblance of a connection so you know, even if it was over telephone, as long as you know what the other person is saying so you can have the conversation, because it's all double-ended.
Yeah, that's exactly been my line of thinking, too, is it's sort of – I'm more sort of set up for it than I ever have been, even though this has been like a five-year fantasy of mine.
Yeah, yeah.
So the way I've been sort of visualizing it to see how practical would this be is I'm picturing starting in my truck because it's cheaper and it's more flexible in terms of like a get out vehicle. So the RV is my preferred way to travel. But one of the things I've been sort of picturing is sort of like a what if scenario is what if I took off for a couple of weeks and went to the RTR in Arizona. Now, nobody knows what that is, but it's a big full time RVer, nomadic meetup that's in the desert in Arizona. It's free land to camp on. You go there, you can stay for 14 days. And then they, as a tribe, they call themselves a tribe, they move around to different land. There's hot springs down there. It's, 70 degree weather right now. And you're free to go. You're free to go. And generally, it's a lot of like-minded people. They have different tribes. So they'll have like, there's Linux geeks there that are in a certain Linux geek tribe. There's Mac users. There's people that are mechanics and just all different walks of life. They come together and they form these tribes, usually about a dozen or so people, and they camp there for a couple of weeks. And it's a fantasy. It's not going to happen this year because it's starting like tomorrow and it goes till January 27th. But my fantasy was live in the truck for 2 weeks, bring a microphone, bring my dog, set up a living situation in the truck, use the back for storage, and go down there and meet up with one of these geeky tribes and make content for a week and then drive home. And I could take the RV, but it's way more appealing when you're driving around the desert to take my 4x4 pickup truck. That's way more interesting, and it's cheaper. And then it's easier to just get up and go. So I want to build something into the truck. So I've been looking at like blow up mattresses that fit into the back seat, and they have like these legs they stand on, and you turn the back seat into a bed, and window covers and insulators. And I picked up a 2,800 milliamp battery, and just all these different things. I'm just sort of slowly collecting to turn this thing into like a little mobile studio. So I may just double down on that idea for some things. Because we're not going to get rid of the studio, in a month or two. So I could just sort of – this could be like a back burner project for a few months. And then I could use that as a temporary transition while we set up a new facility.
Well, I think it's a good idea. I think that the direction that you're taking the network, your business and stuff, I think that's a good direction. Is aligns with what you're trying to do. And then the other thing I think is that what you seem to enjoy doing, at least the times that I've been around you, what it seems that you like enjoy doing – is making short, concise YouTube videos. And so if you can continue to move that direction and find a way to make a living doing that kind of thing where it doesn't seem like that. I never see you get stressed out about video web logging. That never seems to bother. Like, you seem to have fun doing it. Even,
yeah.
And you'll shoot things. You'll put like, When we went to New York, you put like hours and hours and hours into shooting it, and none of it seemed stressful to you, and then you maybe used a tenth of it, if even that. Like, I was really upset with the lack of buttons that actually made it into the video weblog. Like, it really bothered me.
Yeah.
Compared to the time you spent. But
I find it tames the ADD monster, because my mind is always working, and I'm always... Whenever I'm not doing something productive, there's a level of guilt that I experience and a sense of urgency that I should be doing something productive. And vlogging lets me convert that into a creative sort of outlet, which is nice. And I was thinking I would go there to produce the podcast, the audio shows, and maybe have some interesting guests and get some great stories for the shows. But I would also take like the drone cam and, like one of my DSLR and, get some stuff anyways, even if I never use it, just like. If I'm going to be somewhere cool, like in the desert, bobbing around in my truck 4x4, and why not launch the drone and get some shots of that? Could be pretty cool. Could also just be a crazy mid-midlife crisis fantasy. I don't know. I don't know which one. I know you guys know this, Beard and Noah, but... God, we just have the greatest audience ever. A couple of weeks ago, I started saying, I kind of like to experiment with the Nintendo 3DS, but it's not really in my budget to go buy a $200 or $300, in some cases, handheld. And different audience members stepped up and said, hey, I'll send you mine. And so I got one, and it was it's a nice one with all like a nice case and lots of games on there, but it was it's not a US version. So I'm going to – I'd have talked about this in previous episodes. I'm going to try to reflash that. But in the meantime because I wanted to just, something to play with over the holidays. I said, does anybody have a US version they wouldn't mind sending me? Like, what an arrogant ass, asking not for one, but two 3DSs. And our audience is so awesome. Files Copying sent me a Nintendo 3DS XL with just a crap ton of games on here, like Super Smash Brothers and a bunch of old Game Boy Arcade and Nintendo Arcade games. And it's nice. It's red. And it plays my U.S. games. So I was able to, while I was sick, I was able to get some serious gaming in. And I really just like this a lot. This hardware is simple. It's reliable. The battery lasts forever. It does one thing. It plays video games. And that's all it does. And it's just so good at it. And it immediately wakes up. I close it. It immediately goes to sleep. I can open it back up. It's got nice hinges. The 3D effect is actually kind of fun once you get used to it. It is a real interesting example that something that doesn't have to have 2 gigahertz of CPU speed and 4 gigs of RAM and PCIe SSD storage, it can just be... This thing's probably, 100 megahertz? I mean, who knows what they clocked? 200 megahertz they clocked this thing at? It's still so good at what it does that none of the technical details matter. And I really appreciate it. So thank you guys for letting me play around with this stuff. And now that I've gotten just the basic fun out of it, I'm going to start trying to like reflash the UK version and mess around with all that stuff. But man, this has been a really interesting trip down what feels like a parallel technology to the technology we typically use, like as tablets and smartphones and PCs and whatnot. This feels like... the aerospace industry, like where they're a totally different tangent of technology. This Nintendo lives in their own world, and it's been pretty neat to see it. Let's take a moment and let's talk about Ting. Las.ting.com. Go to las.ting.com and get $25 off a Ting device or $25 in service credit. This is such a great service because it's pay for what you use wireless and it's just $6 a month for the line. So I use that pretty practically. We've got 3 phones that are active almost always on the Jupiter Broadcasting account. But frequently, I will turn on a device for just a couple of months or 1 month or if I'm traveling just for a short window of time. And I love that level of control that Ting gives me. I can do it all from my phone with their app, or I can do it from the dashboard with their web app, or I can just call their really good customer service. Ting's focused in on user control and customer service and supporting multiple networks, and that's sort of their strategy. And then they pair that with a super simple pricing system. You just pay $6 for a line. And then it's your usage on top of that. It's all clearly explained on their website. There's no contracts, no early termination fees. Pay for what you use wireless. The way we legitimately all have to we all have to acknowledge this. It's the way wireless would have to go if they launched today in 2018. If on January 1st they launched cellular service for the first time, there's no way the networks would get away with the crap they pull. And Ting is sort of a reboot of the whole idea. They're backed by Two Cows, a company that's been around forever, which I have a lot of respect for. Just go to last.ting.com, support the show, and take $25 off a device. Last.ting.com.
You know, the other day, Chris, you and I were talking about the Ask Noah show and the what the direction should be in 2018. And I did a one-off episode, a special episode, to cover the Meltdown and Spectrare coverage, because I know Mushroom Guy likes it when I mess up the pronunciation of Spectrare. But yeah, no, anyway, so we did a special episode, and the amount of lessons I learned from doing that episode were incredible. I try not to take the criticism on YouTube comments or the likes or unlikes too seriously, because the internet's kind of a rough place, and so you'd burn yourself out if you pay too much attention to it. But I keep an eye on what people genuinely say they liked and what people genuinely say they didn't like. And out of 43 episodes, that particular episode seemed to be the most well-received episode we've ever done. And it was planned in less than 24 hours. It was not really promoted in any meaningful way. I mean, I think we tweeted about it right before we did it. There was no actual production staff involved. It was just me in the studio. I remoted into JB and did all of that stuff. And I've been taking lessons and feedback from that episode ever since. And I think one of the things, the biggest thing I came away with, is that the internet is not friendly to audio podcasts in a social, shareable, searchable way. Google doesn't give you any way, if somebody wants to search things that we talk about on shows, there's no way to search that. And so one of the things I've been kicking around is, how can we alter the show, or what things can we add to the show that make it socially shareable and make it searchable on the internet?
Like sharing snippets and whatnots like that?
So that's one thing I thought about, is putting an actual camera in here and doing and shooting the entire episode as a video, and putting video on the entire show. But we'd never release any of that. I would just clip maybe 5 or 10 minutes out of that and publish that separately as a, like on Facebook kind of a thing, or Twitter, as just kind of a, here's a free 5. Check it out if you want the whole show.
Yeah.
I would
consider voiceover with screenshots. And it doesn't even have to be. You could just be 3 or 4 different screenshots and B-roll. Like, I would consider that before you go to the extent of adding a camera, because you could have a producer take a snip from the show and then give it visuals. I mean, that's a lot of large podcasts do this, where they cut out snippets and they publish this to it, like a dedicated YouTube channel. The H3 podcast by H3H3 Productions has a H3 Highlights channel, where it's just like 10 minutes from a 2-hour interview. And that's my preferred. I like that. So I think you're onto something there. If you go to techsnap.systems or linuxactionnews.com, when you look at the episodes there, and actually this is, I forgot, this is true for Ask Noah as well. If you go to, so you don't ever use the Fireside site, because, you have the Ask Noah dashboard. But if you went, say, go to asknoah.fireside.fm and you looked at episode 44, on the right-hand side, one of the functions that we offer with Linux Action News and the new TechSnap site and with Ask Noah is you can link with a timestamp. So you can send people time-coded MP3 links from these websites, which is something that I think podcasts have been missing for a really long time.
I guess so, and maybe I'm not quite getting through what I'm. So the problem with this is what I'm looking is, you'd have to first listen to the whole episode to find which part you want to link.
It would be a way. It's a word of mouth system. Yeah, it's a way for so you'd have to solicit the audience to say, hey, if there's a moment of the show you think is really useful, send it to somebody. You can use our time code link. But if you want just pure discoverability,
yeah, I don't see people doing that. I think in order to actually get that working, I think to get the ball rolling, I think I've got to take the initiative to first go through and say, these are the things I want you to listen to. And the other thing is I think that with Fireside, again, it's just audio. There's nothing for anyone to look at. And I think that's a fundamental thing that's lacking in the internet world. When nobody clicks on a piece of audio in Facebook, people click on videos, people click on funny GIFs and pictures and stuff like that. So the other thing I had looked at doing is I'm kind of looking at maybe starting a blog and writing a blog post for every episode that, you know, maybe goes into a little bit more detail or maybe adds additional resources or maybe has some information. If we have a guest, maybe that guest writes something or has something and that information is available in the blog. And so I publish that out and maybe that's a shareable thing. That's something that's searchable by Google and people can share. And then it links to the actual episode and say, well, if you like this, maybe you'd like the entire episode. Here's what we talked about this.
Yeah, what do you think, Beard? What's the approach here?
I think a blog is a waste of time. It takes.
Oh, really? It seems like people share blogs way more than they share like anything that takes people's time to listen to or watch.
The problem is, it takes like forever to ramp up that kind of thing. Though it'll take you like a year, year and a half before you see any returns.
So, and you and I were talking about this too. Again, off the air, but you and I were talking about this. You were talking about how you're actually struggling with the same thing on Twitter.
Yeah, I from everything I've been told by everybody that's successful on Twitch, if you want networking and social interaction, Twitter is the place to be. And I'm just not good at Twitter, so I don't know how to handle this.
That's actually a lot of how I feel about Reddit. And I know, again, this ties into the conversation I was having with you, Rakai, my understanding is from the people that are in the know that I need to take more time and effort and be more involved on Reddit, but I rarely ever find, I guess I just haven't hit my power stroke, my stride.
Yeah.
With Reddit, it never seems like I actually connect with people.
Yeah.
So I find Reddit and Twitter to be useful tools for the field that we're in, but I don't think I would ever use them if I didn't have a podcast myself. I might read Reddit, but I don't think I'd have an account. I certainly wouldn't have a 9 or 10 year old account. And It is not my core competency. It is not. If you were to ask me things that are pros and cons about my job, it would be in the cons column, and I find it awful. So let me say this: you could invest a lot of time and effort in setting up a camera and then going through and reviewing content and deciding what to clip and then clipping it and adding bumpers to it and uploading it to YouTube, or you could spend hours writing blog posts or refining scripts to blog posts. But I'd say this. If you just do a really good job with content, everything kind of solves itself. So just looking at your download numbers for Ask Noah, the Meltdown Inspector episode is way ahead of every other show you've ever done except Hacking on Linux, which has more downloads, but it's from December 19th. So it's had way more time in the can. The fact that a show you did out of cycle – Not even a full long week ago is doing more downloads than the 1, 2, 3 shows previous to it tells you that when you nail the content, the rest kind of clicks into place. So
yes,
my internal logic has always been, if I know that to be true, then why not take all of the energy I would spend making clips or writing blog posts and double down on making my content better?
So because I'll tell you, or at least I'll tell you why I decided to do that is so there. To a certain degree is I think that really great content comes from, I think a certain amount of, absolutely, no doubt about it, a certain amount of it comes from preparation and hard work. But then there's another certain amount of thing where they say like success is where preparation meets opportunity. And I think that's what happened on Friday is that I was prepared to do a good job, willing to put in the work. And then all of a sudden opportunity presents itself where it says, okay, here's a topic people really care about. Here's a topic people really want to know about. And I just canceled all my service calls on Thursday, spent Thursday researching, reading, preparing, and then did a show the very next day. And you know, and it worked out. But you don't always have that opportunity isn't necessarily always there. And when I was, I was speaking, I don't know if this is in the recording or not, but I was speaking with a gentleman named Chris Curran, who runs a business for doing podcasts. And one of his things is every week you should allocate equal amount of time to prepping and doing your show as promoting your show. And so if you spend an hour on the air and 2 hours prepping, then you should spend 3 hours promoting that amount of work in order to actually grow the podcast. And so, yes, that episode on Friday is doing good. And I think it will, I really do believe that's going to be an all new high, but I want to go from 10,000 to 50,000. And I want to know how do I make that leap? What can I be doing today so that tomorrow, and when I say tomorrow, I mean figuratively speaking, but figuratively tomorrow, we are twice as many downloads. And then the year after that, we're 3 times many downloads. And so the growth never stagnates. How do I do that?
Yeah, I think that's a good observation, and he's probably right. And promotion is an area that we have, JB in general, has sucked at. And in part, it's because I think I'd be a lot better at it if I only had one show a week. If I only did User Air, then I would probably be when I'm not doing User Air, I would probably be out talking about User Air, you know, building community around just User Air. But I don't. When we get off the air, I'm going to go do Unfilter. And then when I get done doing Unfilter, I'm going to go do TechSnap. You know, so it's on to the next.
Yeah, so what's my excuse, though? That's my...
you got a job, you know, you got kids.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I say good on you. I think the true thing, like if you ever want to get into media, any kind, podcasting or whatever, and you want to know like one real like hard truth that really fucking sucks, it's you got to seize opportunities, and there's often in this particular field only one or two of them a year. And so you really got to just be on the go, ready for that moment all the time. And you churn and churn and churn, and you keep making great content. But every now and then you get handed a meltdown story that's ginormous, and there's a very specific, like for us, there's a very specific Linux angle to this. In fact, it's a story that's fascinating and still developing. And, you know, you were ready to go all in, and then the second time you nailed it with Brandon coming on. So I think... You basically just got to keep working until those opportunities come along. And that's the hard truth in media is, you know, it's like Brian Williams. You look at Brian Williams is going to be stuck doing a shit late night show on MSNBC for the rest of his career unless a huge opportunity comes along. And he seizes that moment, and he's the go-to person. And then all of a sudden, he'll be elevated again in the industry, and he could be back at the NBC anchor desk. It's the same thing for podcasts. It's there's these moments that come along where people are hungry for information and resources and insight. And if you can provide the information they're looking for and the insights that they need, and you can take advantage of it and strike at the right time, it's huge for podcasts. That's just how it works.
I do want to add this,
though. Same with YouTube videos or blog posts.
I agree with everything you're saying. I do want to add this. If there's anyone out there listening and then they're saying, oh, okay, so I just got to wait for the right opportunity. I get people at Altaspeed that will do this. They'll say, you know what? I'm waiting. Because, you know, the thing is we hire people in, obviously, and I think this really shocks a couple people that when they first get hired is that, you know, when we hire you, we don't just send you out to deal with server clusters at the airbase or something like that. I mean, you're going to start at smaller clients and working with remedial problems until you've built up a rapport with us that we know that we can trust you, and we know that you have the skills and competency to go handle bigger jobs. And I think that that's frustrating to people sometimes. And I get people that will say, well, as soon as you give me the opportunity, then I'm going to put in the effort and I'm going to work hard and show you that I can do it. It doesn't work like that. You have to be doing a great bang up job every single time. And so if I was out there, and I've said this before, as I went into the show with this mentality, and I maintain it today to a lesser extent because I've altered what I think matters. But I've always said I didn't care how many people listen to the show. If no people listen to the show, I wouldn't do any less of a job. I'm going to put as much effort as I possibly can into every single episode. But when that opportunity comes, that's when that all that work pays off, because then people actually care, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. I think you're onto it. I think you're doing good. It's a multi-year process, isn't it? But you're onto it. And as long as you're just cranking out the best show you can and taking advantage of the opportunities when they come, I think you're right. Then it is time to start looking at other ways to sort of increase discovery. I think YouTube clips are a good one. I would avoid going more than five, 10 minutes. Definitely wouldn't go 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. 2-3 is what I was thinking of the free five or the enhanced five or something like that.
You might even consider launching a second channel. So you have the Ask Noah channel where you could put long form reviews, and then you could have Ask Noah highlights where you would have the reason for that is if you think about why am I hitting subscribe? Because I like this kind of content. Well, if I decide I like – this is why the Jupiter Broadcasting YouTube channel is very slow for new – it's discoverability, and then people bounce from that to our website. But we don't –
that's what I did.
Yeah. We don't have like a million subscribers because if you subscribe, well, one day you get User Air. The next day you get Unfilter. The day after that you get Ask Noah. And then you get a couple of other Linux shows. And then all of a sudden, you know, you just get all this different stuff, different variant. One of it's half hour. Some of it's 2 hours. Maybe you don't even care about BSD. And so, I'm not subscribing to that. I'll just let the feed show it to me when it shows it to me. But if I knew you know, it was going to be these 3-minute clips. That's all that comes out of this channel. Then it's a safe subscribe because, well, that's a known quantity. That's what I expect. That's what my expectation is from this channel. So I'll subscribe to that. So I think you get way more subscribers when you narrow it down like that.
Yeah, for me, the Jupiter Broadcasting site was just easier to download my local content than YouTube DL was. So
yeah. All right, before we go, because I know we should go soon. God, I had so much. I wanted to talk to you guys about Levi, my new dog, which you're going to meet when you come out, Noah, at the end of the month.
Yep,
which will be cool.
He's the cutest dog ever.
He is so great. I got so many stories. I'll tell you I've grown up my whole life with dogs, and it wasn't until my adult life, about 7 years ago, that I've always had dogs, except for a few periods when I first moved out of the house. And then after we started having major problems with Dylan's allergies when he was really young, and we weren't sure how severe it was, we decided, okay, we got to get rid of these dogs and give them. So we gave them away to some family friends, and so that was 7 years ago, and we haven't had any pets since then. And so I decided I was willing to just kind of roll the dice again after Angela took Dylan and got him lots of allergy testing. So he's had some progress there with that. And then also as he's gotten older, he's had less and less allergy reactions to dogs specifically. I've been sort of watching him around family where we go and they have dogs. And, you know, like his grandma's has dogs and his grandpa's has dogs and both sets. So it's, you know, it's a good opportunity. It's like I've always used that as sort of like field testing to see how his allergies responded. And plus, as he's gotten older, he's now a active participant in mitigating allergies. So he works with us to mitigate the problem. So I thought, okay, maybe this is the right time. He's old enough. It doesn't seem to affect him as much. And let's give this a shot. So we put ourselves on a list for a dog. And we said, hey, you know, there's a lot of dogs coming up from Texas. I don't know why they're coming to Washington right now, but from the hurricanes in Texas months ago. The dogs have been filtering their way up through the states, and now they're just filling the shelters here in Washington. And so we said, we're kind of interested in a dog about this size, about this demeanor. We live in an RV, so we want them to be able to travel with us, and we have kids, and these are sort of the requirements that we have. And they called us up and said, hey, we think we have a dog for you. So would you like to come meet Toby? And so I've told this, I'll just make it this brief. So we go there, we meet Toby, fall in love. We reschedule to have the kids come and meet Toby. They love Toby. It's a huge love fest. We're going to get this dog. It's a great dog. And they call us up 2 days later and say, we actually gave the dog to another family. And we were devastated, just devastated. And they said, would you like us to keep your name on the list? And I told Adia, I said, don't answer. I was offended. Like, why do they give away our dog? What's wrong with us? Are we just going to fall in love with another dog and they're going to give it away to somebody else? I'm like, don't answer those sons of bitches. You know, I'm like, I'm done with them. And so a couple of days went by and she said, well, what do you think? I said, oh, all right, yeah, call him back and tell us to keep us on the list. That's fine. And so 2 or so weeks go by. And kind of forgotten about it a little bit. Was still looking at dogs online, reading about dogs and different breeds and things like that. And, you know, kind of refreshing myself on training dogs. And so just sort of spending that time looking at the prices for dog food and just all that kind of like research stuff that I tend to do when I get into a topic. And we get a phone call and saying, hey, we have another dog. Would you like to see him? You can go to our website, look at a picture of him. And if you like him, come on in and check him out. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's great. But I got to go record TechSnap. So I jump in the truck, drive down to the studio, and ended up Wes got sick that morning and couldn't make it in to record TechSnap. So I was all of a sudden left with a completely unscheduled day because I'd cleared my whole day because I was going to record and edit and publish. So it was just going to be 12 hours of TechSnap. And all of a sudden I had 12 hours on my hand. And I guess I'll start driving home. So I start driving home and I'm like, oh, maybe I'll swing in and look at that dog. And I jump in there and I immediately liked him instantly. And I could also tell he was the smartest dog in the room just based on having some pretty smart dogs growing up as a kid. We had just this brilliant, and it sounds weird to say that, but we had a border collie that I swear was brilliant.
Yes. Yes. I have a border collie. I can confirm.
Yeah. So I've had experience with dumb dogs and smart dogs and I like them all, but you could immediately tell which dogs in a kennel of like 4 dogs, which ones are the different demeanors. And, so I go in there and, they clear out all the other dogs, and I sit there with Levi for a moment, and I say, you want to come up? And I tap on my lap, and he jumps up in my lap, and he starts nuzzling me. He puts his head up on my shoulder and nuzzles into my neck, and I just like, oh, this is the sweetest dog ever. And so I text to D. I'm like, you got to come down here and meet this dog. They won't let me adopt him without you. And she said, well, I can't. I've got patients coming in. I'm like, Hadia, this is the dog. We have got to get this dog. And she's like, okay, well, let me see what I can do. So she reschedules two patients, has somebody come in and cover her for another. And she didn't have a car either at this time because her car was in the shop for transmission repairs. So she borrows a friend's car, reschedules two patients, has somebody come in and cover, rushes down to the shelter, meets Levi, falls in love with him. Stays there while we fill out all the paperwork and we wait for all the people, jumps back in her car, rushes back to her clinic to get the last patient of the day. And then I'm just left there by myself, and they're closing. It's the end of their day. And they're, okay, thank you, Mr. Fisher. I'm sent out the door. And all of a sudden I just have this dog. And it felt a lot like when we had Dylan and we had to leave the birthing center, and all of a sudden you just have a child. Like, you showed up without a child and then you leave with a child. And like, I showed up at this place without a dog, and then I was leaving with a dog, and all of a sudden the things of like, oh yeah, he's got to go in my vehicle. How's that going to go? Like, all these things, like, I got to get food tonight. I got to feed this thing tonight. All that stuff just is, it's a really interesting process to go through. And I wasn't expecting to be surprised by much of it. Thankfully, he's a year and a half old. He was potty trained before he came to us. Thank God for that. I'm so thankful for that. And he seems to have had no problem teaching us when he needs to go outside. So that's been good. But nothing been too surprising. It's been all pretty pleasant, except for over Christmas, I got really sick and had a fever of 103, and I just got really laid up for like 2 or 3 days. And I would take like ibuprofen or Tylenol, and it would bring my fever down. And then, that stuff starts to wear off. And every time my fever started kicking in, Levi would come over and he would check in on me, and he would lay on me, and he would snuggle me every time my fever started to get worse. And I started to know that my medication was wearing off because Levi would come over and check in on me. And it started the first day. I was like, is this dog being extra kind to me because I'm sick? Like, no. And I just dismissed the thought. But by like day three, I had this fever, and my kids had fevers too, same thing. It was clear that every time the fever was getting worse, like, Levi would come in and check in on either me or Dylan. I'd never had a dog do this before. And, there was like half the day where I was just laid up. Actually, it was a whole day. I was just laid up on the couch, and he stayed with me the whole day. Laid there with me the whole day, just wanting to snuggle. I got a picture of it. I tweeted. I'd never had a pet do that, and that was really surprising. And then once I got better, we packed up the RV and took him down the road for the first time ever in the RV, which is quite the experience. As soon as I put the key in the ignition, I got his attention immediately. He knew something was changing. And then the slides, the walls come in. and he walks the perimeter as the slides come in and out. And he did great. We drove down, for 4 or 5 hours down to Oregon, and just had a great time. He made the road trip better. We let him go off leash on the beach, and he had a freaking blast. And yeah, so it was good. It was
so
been really
does he
good with the new
does
dog.
He live with you in the RV, or does he stay at the studio?
Oh no, yeah, he comes down to the studio with me some days.
Sure.
But then, yeah, he's at the RV with us. And then some days he goes to doggy daycare. There's a pretty cool, facility that is also his vet. So we can take him there, and they have this whole doggy daycare facility that I kind of wish I could play in. So you can buy a package where it's, like, $15 a day. So it's not even all that expensive either. So we just buy a package of 10, and then we just take him there once or twice a week. Wears them out too, which is nice.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, I love dogs. In fact, so I grew up around dogs, same as you, I think. I grew up around dogs, always had a dog, still have dogs. I have a border collie, actually. And when I was probably, and I always, I never grew up afraid of dogs, or I was never really cautious, so to speak, probably to a bad extent. And I remember when I was like probably 13 or 14 years old, there was this dog that lived across from my parents, and the owners always said, you know, keep your kids away. He's not friendly. And he got out one day and he came running running after me and snarling and stuff like that. And I just kind of held my hand out and he sniffed me. And then that was it. Then him and I were friends. Like, oh, it's like, oh, we're cool.
Yeah, every now and then you hear stories about somebody getting their hand bit or something, and it's just horrifying. But,
I think part of it is that people just don't know how to act around animals. Like, if you just show respect to the dog and you're not, you know, aggressive and I don't know what it is. I can't really explain it, but just dogs like me and I like dogs.
It's been interesting learning his dog body language. Like, that's really what you just got to watch is, like, that's how we figured out when he needed to go outside and when he's, you know, uncomfortable or something, and or when he's on alert. And it didn't even cross. There's still so many firsts. We've had him for over a month now, but there's still so many firsts. Like, when we got to Seaside, Oregon in the RV, we stayed at a resort at a Thousand Trails. Didn't even cross my mind, dude, that all day, all night, you're going to hear people coming and going from their rigs, opening up their RVs, because these walls aren't that thick, and they're getting in their vehicles, and they're loud, look, trucks, you know, that they're driving around, and the gravel's crackling while they're driving. And so the first night we got there, because we got there at night, he was like, woof, woof, woof. You know, he's woofing at everything. And I was like, oh, God, of course. You know, we got this terrier mix. He's going to be on edge, barking at everything. But by the morning, you know, really, actually even by the night, I mean, by the evening, we were able to, you know, it's okay. It's all right. And he adapted. And now, you know, it was for the rest of our time at the trailer park. He loves watching people, but, he doesn't bark at him. He doesn't make a big fuss. And so he's been really adaptable in that way, in ways that we didn't expect, you know, like being able to drive down the road and then go somewhere where there's tons of noise going around. You hear other dogs' collars. That's the thing that really gets them, is other dogs' collars making noise when they're out walking their dogs. And he's been good at learning that kind of stuff. So that's been really nice. I think a year and a half was just the right age for us, because he's not like an old dog set in his ways. And he's also young enough where he's still a lot of fun and he's still really energetic. So it's just it was a great age to get him at. And, you know, he came all the way up from Texas, which is pretty cool, because it was this weird sort of side story. I started following, you know, all these different threads for Unfiltered. I've been tracking sort of like what's going on down in Texas post hurricanes, and the total displacement of dogs was just one of the stories that caught my interest, which sort of led us to this whole path. And so it's sort of a weird sort of come around from doing the Unfiltered show.
So, something I've done since I've moved is I've started picking up streaming again. I kind of stopped streaming during the time I was moving, but I decided on December 31st that starting January 1st, I was going to start streaming every day again. And so far, I've streamed every day.
Nice.
Every day?
Yep, every single day.
Every day?
In this just this month, I have streamed 32 hours and 3 minutes.
Oh my God, dude.
How's it going? Like, is it yielding a fruit, so to speak?
It's slow progress, but it's slowly picking back up. I think I've got a schedule down where on the weekdays I stream in the evenings for a couple hours, and then on the weekends I do like 8 to 10 hour streams, and people seem to like that.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, if you're into that kind of stuff, are you still?
You're like a TV station. That's what you are. You're like a cable TV channel that people can tune in for a few hours.
Yeah, pretty much.
Are you still? Do you still watch like the ESPN of computer games?
Oh, esports. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was having a conversation with a friend of mine. He does sports announcing. So he calls like football games and hockey games, basketball games, stuff like that. And he was telling me like it's an art to learn how to be able to, you know, memorize the players' numbers and then being able to memorize their names so that when they're doing this and calling it out. And I instantly thought of you, and I was like, I wonder if it's an art form for the people that do that kind of game calling on the computer. Like, is that – like, how do they even know? Yeah. Like, all the avatars look the same in, like, Counter-Strike. How would you know which one's
which? It's a learned talent. You do a lot of memorization. Apparently. For that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Just even the cadence that you use during that is a learning
thing.
It's
no different than regular sports, really.
Yeah, but in regular sport, I mean, unless you're talking about Russians, you don't have names like Easy 12 175 Nailer.
Well, yeah, you just learn the name. you have a specific set of people, and it's just different names. That's about it.
Well, that's that. If I could have any job in the world, that's what I want to do. I would want to be a sports announcer for the computer version of ESPN. Even though I don't really care about sports, I don't even care about computer games. I just that's what I would want to do.